the biggest show in town is Huckleberry Hound. For all you guys and gals, the biggest clown in town is Huckleberry Hound. With all his cartoon pals, it's Huckleberry Fun, it's for everyone. So come on, gather round, get yourself all set, turn up your TV set for Huckleberry Hound. Laugh oh so merry, Huckleberry, Huckleberry Hound.
Hello and welcome to the 40th, yes that's right, 40th episode of Tooncast, brought to you by the Geekcast Radio Network. I am your host, TFG on Mike, and today I am joined once again by Kevin, Professor Bosque, Dog Thompson. Hello.
Hello.
How are you?
I am fantastic.
Today we will begin our Hanna-Barbera spotlight with Huckleberry Hound.
Yay! that's the track that you would hear, you know, those old Hanna-Barbera shows. They'd have laugh tracks and stuff like that, so that would be a challenge for that,
what have you been up to since last time we did one of these shows?
A couple things. Besides trying to narrow down my top 10 voice actors of every decade, which is turning out to be quite the project, now I've decided I'm doing both male and female lists, from one from the 80s, one from the 90s, and one from like the early, before the 80s. So I got quite the chore trying to narrow those down. But I have most of them narrowed down to the top 10. Now it's just ordering them around.
Yeah.
But I did also do, I'm getting obsessed with top 10 lists, apparently. Because I just did a top 10 list, and the topic was the 10 best female roles of the 80s in cartoons.
And let me guess, Chitara did not make the list.
Chitara did not make the list. I did mention her in the introduction as, you know, a notable female character, but there's just too many good female characters during the decade. You have lots of things like Rainbow Bright and a Strawberry Shortcake and She-Ra and Gem and... Penny from Inspector Gadget, so there's a lot to choose from, but
yes.
I came up with my top 10, and I was happy with it.
Yeah, I know you're disconnected from the internet for the majority, but I saw a Toy Fair 2010 coverage of Mattel and Masters of the Universe, the Classics line. They have shown off the She-Ra figure that will be coming out for the Masters of the Universe Classics line. Also, earlier this, about back in January, they released the very first ever Adora figure.
Nice.
For Masters of the Universe Classics line.
That's cool.
Yes. I haven't been doing too much. I'm still coming to terms with being in my fucking 30s, but, hey, what are you going to do? So I guess we're going to get things started. Take us away with the history lesson.
Alright, for today's history lesson, we're going old school, back to 1958, like Mike said, to start our spotlight on Hanna-Barbera. Hanna-Barbera's first new-for-TV cartoon animation project, not their first project overall, but their first new-for-TV cartoon animated project was Huckleberry Hound. It hit the airwaves on October 2nd, 1958. The show lasted a total of 4 seasons and aired 69 total episodes. Huckleberry Hound consisted of multiple segments, which we'll get into when we get to the actual show, but that's it for the history lesson. Do you remember Huckleberry Hound at all, Mike?
Oh, yeah. You know,
since you said you're in your 30s, I thought your memory might be going.
Shut up. Yeah, that's, you know, keep talking about that. Then damn dolphins are going to suck ass this year, or next year, or whatever. But anyway, this is something we're probably going to bring up in all of the Hanna-Barbera episodes, just like I brought up in the Flintstones episode. These were cartoons that I thought was running concurrent to my childhood, because they were, but by the 80s, they were already in mass syndication. They're still in mass syndication today on Boomerang. Everybody remembers Huckleberry and his tone-deaf version of Oh My Darling Clementine. I think that's his major signature. That and his southern drawl.
Right.
Yeah.
I remember. I mean, I don't. I don't remember them as this has to do basically with all the Hanna-Barbera cartoons. I don't remember them as much, obviously, as I would remember ones that were more in my prime years, maybe, I guess I would call them, you know, when I'm watching Transformers, G.I. Joe, etc., because that's when I was super into stuff. But, like, I do remember being someone before, like, in the days when I would watch Smurfs and you know, Sesame Street and stuff like that. I do remember being exposed to most of the cartoons, some more than others. But I just remember it being, you know, you can kind of equate the Hanna-Barbera, the cartoons that we're going to be talking about over the next little while, the Looney Tunes or Merry Melodies, like Pink Panther and all those type, Popeye, all those types of cartoons. It's just stuff that just seemed like it was always on, and it was just, it represented something completely different for me. It was like, I don't know, kids today don't know what these cartoons were like unless obviously they've watched them in reruns, but I don't think they can have the appreciation. It's almost like video games today where people get so wrapped up in the graphics and then the animation, and they forget about the actual thing that's important, like in a video game, the actual gameplay. And I still today have not seen games that can compete with the games that were out when I was a kid. They look like movies, yeah, but they don't have that same quality of gameplay. And it's kind of like that with some of these cartoons. Yeah, these don't look flashy, and, you know, a modern big kid might get bored with them, but they have substance, which a lot of cartoons these days don't.
Yeah, I completely agree with you.
I mean, it seemed like people just took more time in the writing of it. The lines are more calculated, you know, the voice acting. I mean, when we're talking about, we'll get into that in a second, but good Lord, we're talking about legends now when we get into Hanna-Barbera.
Yes, exactly. You know, it's one of those things where when I was growing up, I watched all kinds of cartoons. I watched Casper, I watched Scooby-Doo, I watched Jetsons, Flintstones, Peanuts, the Charlie Brown stuff, Transformers, Voltron, Thundercats, attempted but failed at watching Silverhawks, you know, stuff like that, you know, but I was, you know, Looney Tunes was always a big part of my childhood, you know, you know, and like I said, again, these cartoons, like the especially Hanna-Barbera ones, in the hell, Looney Tunes even before that, you know, they came out at a time where I wasn't even thought of, or hell, with Looney Tunes, my parents weren't even born yet when those came out. But I mean, with these, it's like, holy crap, my mom grew up on these cartoons, I grew up on these cartoons watching them in syndication, and they're just good, wholesome cartoons.
Yeah, and I think another connection I have with these cartoons, I have a sister that's 2 years older, but I have a brother that's almost 10 years older than I am, and he really grew up with this stuff. So, you know, I kind of remember being exposed to them through him, too, when I was at a really young age, and I don't know, it's just nothing but good memories. Can I remember, like, specifics of all the cartoons besides, you know, obviously I can remember, like, trademarks and, like, some of the signature parts of each character. I can't remember tons about the actual shows. Like, if I watched episodes of them, you know, it would be like watching them for the first time because I would no way remember seeing those episodes. But you still remember the characters, you still remember the voice, you still remember the trademarks, and I think that is a testament to, you know, these cartoons. I don't care, you know, the animation doesn't, whatever, but the cartoons, except for a few that get dated with some of the sayings or some of the phrases that aren't used anymore, or, you know, maybe some pop culture references that people wouldn't get. But the actual, like, stories and the humor and just the concept of them is timeless, in my opinion.
I completely agree. I guess we can go ahead and move into the characters and voice actors. One thing I noticed about your listing, you don't list the dog anywhere. There was an episode of Huck that he was the mailman, and he went against this dog that would laugh. The dog would kind of snicker and laugh like Muttley does, like...
Of course, one thing that you'll find, especially for those listeners out there that want to look up more information on most of these older cartoons, it's really hard.
Yeah.
I mean, I have books on cartoons, so I went to a couple different kind of like encyclopedia type things and cartoon dedicated books to get some of the information. But what it's not hard finding information on the lead character, but to find information on any of the supporting cast is really hard on these shows, unless you just go back through and rewatch them and have DVDs, of course.
True.
I was impressed that I came up with any of the bad guys myself. let me just list the characters that we do have, and then we can talk about them for a second. But obviously the good guy on it, the title character, Huckleberry Hound, and in case you've been living in a cave your entire life, Huckleberry Hound is a blue dog that spoke with a southern drawl, like Mike mentioned before, with a relaxed, sweet, and well-intentioned personality. We'll get more into him in a little bit, but some of the opposing characters that he came across. There was a Powerhouse Pierre, which was a tall and muscular, unshaven character with a French accent. There was Dinky Dalton, who was a rough and tough Western outlaw that Huck usually has to capture. Crazy Coyote, which was an Indian who Huck often had to defeat, who was his match. And the Rose, which was two crows with mafia accents who often annoyed Farmer Huck. So you always had kind of a variety of different people that he came across in his shorts or in his little episodes. Obviously, he was the only one that was around in all of them.
Right. I like the crows, too. The crows were funny.
Yeah. And, I mean, obviously, it's hard. You can't really do, like, a favorite or a least favorite character with most of these Hanna-Barbera shows just because of the limited number of main characters. You know, Huckleberry Hound would always be everyone's favorite, so that kind of goes without saying.
Yeah. Yeah. I did also like, and I know we'll get into this, but I really like the Pixie Dixie and Mr. Jinx cartoons. Those were always kind of funny to me because it was a new, I don't think it was a new take, but it was Hanna-Barbera's take on Tom and Jerry. So instead of one mouse and a cat, it's two mice and a cat.
Right. Yeah, and we'll get into those other segments probably a little bit later so people aren't confused as to what we're talking about with Pixie and Dixie. The voice cast, I mean, goodness. You have, on this show alone, two of possibly the greatest voice actors of all time.
Yep.
And for those of you who don't know who voices Huckleberry Hound, it's a legendary voice actor, Dawes Butler, who does a ton of work for Hanna-Barbera and, you know, a variety of other, and of course, joining him on this show was Don Messick. And Don Messick and Dawes Butler, along with Mel Blanc, probably are three of the greatest voice actors ever. So,
oh, yes, very much so.
And then actually you have another veteran voice actor, not as probably famous as Butler and Messick in cartoon land, but Bob Holt also provided the voice of Dinky Dalton. So, you know, and there was probably others. One thing that you'll find with a lot of these old shows is a lot of times the voice actors went uncredited. You'll find that especially in anything that Mel Blanc's in.
Yeah.
Because, and this is the only thing I'll say, that, and maybe it's not necessarily his fault, but...
It's not his fault. No, it is his fault because he asked for that. What happened was he asked for more money and they told him, you know, Warner Brothers told him, no, we can't, but we can get... He goes, okay, well, then I want exclusive voice credit for all the roles.
Yeah, and what the norm back then was for nobody to get credit.
Right.
Nobody ever got credited for voiceover work because it was kind of the, you know, a forgotten art, I guess, if you want to call it. And Mel Blanc had to put in his contract that he get credit for his character, but he was the only one. So, you know, that's why it's impossible. When I'm making these top 10 lists of voice actors, like take June Foray, for example, you can't find half the roles she did as far as credits go because she was in so much stuff with Mel Blanc and she couldn't get credited for it.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, a lot of these characters we don't know, but as far as the Hanna-Barbera goes, you're going to see a whole lot of Dawes Butler and Don Messick.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't complain about that at all.
I can't either.
And what separates them from me, compared to a lot of voice actors these days, is so many of their voices do not sound anything like each other.
Yep.
And you couldn't tell that it's the same person. When you're a kid, you didn't know that every, like, especially if you're a kid back in the 50s or 60s watching these Hanna-Barbera things, you didn't realize that every single cartoon you watched was the same person.
Right, exactly.
Because that's basically what it was. It was one of three people. And that's just astounding. Like, just, I don't know, it's just, it boggles my mind. I don't know how people can have that type of talent to just do so many voices.
Well, you know, I said, I don't know when I said it, but I said something about when somebody was talking to me about all the interviews I did, or all the interviews that I've done so far, you know, and I said, you know, I don't like speaking ill of the dead, but, you know, God rest his soul, if Mel Blanc was around right now and I got a chance to interview him, it would just be too immense. I mean, it's one of those things, you know, Frank Welker, that interview would be a nightmare because of the simple fact that, and it's not anything against Mr. Welker at all, but because of the simple fact that he's done so much.
And the other thing that you find, especially with Frank Welker, I don't know if it would be the same with some of these, obviously, most of these guys that have passed already, but it would be the same if you could talk to them, but they do so many roles that, I know in Frank Welker's case, he can't even remember half of them.
Yeah.
And I've seen a couple other people where they've been asked to do a certain voice, and they have to just outright say, you know, it's been so long, I don't think I could do that justice. I don't think I could come back into that voice, just, you know, spur of the moment type thing.
Right.
But very good voice actors. You're going to hear a lot of repetition as far as the voice actor segment for the next couple shows.
Yeah, hell, we might as well just pre-record the voice actor segment for all the shows and not even...
Just give have one file for Messick, one file for Butler, and
yep.
Just be like, hey, that's
the Yeah. Yeah, you know, like I said before, I know even though it's kind of hard to find some of the supporting characters, I like the dog that was the villain for Huck in a couple of the cartoons. That was very, very cool. So, I guess, is that all we're going to say about the characters and stuff?
I'm good with that.
Okay, moving into the behind-the-scenes segment. This show represented new ground for the team of Hanna-Barbera and Kellogg's. This was the first attempt by the company to make a cartoon specifically for TV. At first, Huckleberry was based in part on both Droopy from MGM theatrical cartoons and Goofy from Disney Works. At first, they thought they were going to give Huckleberry a new voice for every profession he portrayed. However, they eventually instead decided to go with Dawes Butler, who they had heard in 1953 MGM cartoon Three Little Pups. Huckleberry almost was named Alfalfa Hound or Cactus Hound, but the blue skin color led them to choose Huckleberry. Okay, no. No. Just no. Kellogg's loved the initial character design, but vetoed the name, saying it was too long for kids to remember. They also hired two of Warner Brothers' best to work on the show in Michael Maltese and Warren Foster, as far as the writers go.
It was an interesting thing. It's hard to fathom what it must have been like before cartoons, before made-for-TV cartoons.
I could not.
I mean, before, the only time you ever saw cartoons was when you went to a movie theater, and instead of showing all the trivia and bull crap that you see these days and previews, you used to see theatrical shorts.
Yeah.
Like, that was usually what they played, you know, before, and I might be talking a little bit out of ignorance, obviously, since I wasn't around there, but it's my understanding that that's usually what you saw as far as cartoons go. You saw them before movies or, you know, at theater, some way like that.
Yeah, you're right.
And, you know, there might have been an occasional special that you saw on TV, but there was no such thing at this point as a made-for-TV cartoon.
Right.
And to imagine what kind of pressure they must have been under and, you know, whether they would succeed or not is just... And I never knew that Kellogg's had anything to do with any of these Hanna-Barbera shows.
But and, I can kind of see the tie-in, though. I mean, if you think about it, because they can make... Well, not Kellogg's specifically, but like they do now with, like, cereal. They tie in cereal to everything. Look at what...
Yeah.
You know, when the first cereal tie-ins I ever remember was, even though I never ate the cereal because I don't like it, but Michael Jordan and Wheaties. I mean,
yeah.
Jordan was always on a Wheaties box. And now, of course, nowadays, they want to cash in on that marketing and they put any NBA player that they want to on the Wheaties box.
it's just, I don't know, it's just hard to imagine. It's not only hard to imagine a TV era life before Super TV cartoon.
I know it.
Because we grew up just like, you know, overdose with them.
Yeah.
It's also hard to imagine what it must have been like if they were pitching or coming up with the idea that these characters didn't exist at this point. Like, for our lifetime, there's always been Bugs Bunny. There's always been Mickey Mouse. There's always been Yogi Bear, Huckleberry Hound. Like, they have just, it's almost like they've existed forever.
Yeah. Oh, I completely agree.
And to picture them pitching these characters and having, you know, the talk back and forth of, you know, we don't like the name, or we like the name, or we like the look, or do we have to go with blue, or just these, all these different things, and it seems like, you know, the decision seems so easy for us just because these people have always existed, but I wonder what it was like sitting at that table or sitting in that conference room or wherever and trying to pitch characters like Huckleberry Hound and what kind of reaction they got.
Yeah, you know, it all goes back to, like, say, you know, I like how they showed off that process in Tiny Toon Adventures, the very first episode of how, you know, the loony beginning, you know, of how that kind of, you know, even though they were kind of making fun of it, but they were also showing us how that process is done. But still, you know,
Huckleberry was almost too long of a name for them to use.
Well, yeah, well, like it said, you know, kids wouldn't remember it.
I can remember it.
Well, right, but, you know, well, it's the same thing with, well, not Yogi, but Snagglepuss. What the fuck is a Snagglepuss? You know what I mean? I mean, nobody really, you know, I don't know, but, I mean, we'll get to that eventually, but, yeah. So, are we going to move into the actual show?
Just in case people aren't 100% aware of this, obviously, I'll just mention, the directors, Joseph Barbera and William Hanna. Everyone's heard of Hanna and Barbera, but there are actual people, in case you didn't know that, and they're the ones that obviously directed the show. And like we said, the writers, they stole two people from Warner Brothers, and there was a mixture of some other people that we won't get into. But yeah, we can get into the actual show now.
Since at the time no 30-minute cartoons had been established, the Huckleberry Hound show consisted of three different 7-minute cartoons, as was the norm at the time. At first, these three segments were Huckleberry Hound, Pixie and Dixie, and Yogi Bear. Yogi would later go on to host his own show and would be replaced by Hokey Wolf. In Huckleberry Hound, they set out to have more verbal than visual gags and so relied on great scripts rather than great animation for their success. They also decided to instill humor by having deadpan reactions to events by Huckleberry. The credits originally, Huckleberry would interact with the Cornelius the Kellogg's mascot. Huckleberry Hound's southern drawl and laid-back mannerisms bear close resemblance to Southern Wolf in MGM cartoons, including those produced by Hanna-Barbera. The term Huckleberry can be slang synonym for a rube or an amateur, and it seems to fit Huck's personality. Most of his shorts consisted of Huck trying to perform jobs in different fields, ranging from policeman to dog catcher, with backfiring results, yet usually coming out on top either through slow persistence or sheer luck. Huck did not seem to exist in a specific time period, as he has also been a Roman gladiator, a medieval knight, and a rocket scientist. He was never in the future, though, only the present as of the show's airing or the past. Another trademark of Huck was his tone-deaf as well as inaccurate rendition of "Oh My Darling Clementine," often used as a running gag. He also commonly used the phrase "and stuff like that there" in place of "etc." This phrase showed up quite often in many Hanna-Barbera productions at this time for some reason. But Huckleberry said it more often than anyone else. One of his careers had a job position on the door listed as TS and SLTT. When asked what it stood for, Huck said, "Top Secrets and Stuff Like That There." That's so funny. Various Hanna-Barbera characters were known for frequently turning into the viewing audience to make little comments and sides, following the tradition of the MGM cartoons directed by Tex Avery and produced by Fred Quimby, characters of the 1940s and earlier by Groucho Marx. Huck took this to somewhat of an extreme, as a significant part of typical cartoon was his running narrative to the audience about whatever he was trying to accomplish. The other thing, which that doesn't really mention, They had a... This is probably the first cartoon that I remember watching that had a narrator.
Because
the narrator would always open, and, you know, this is Huckleberry Hound, the policeman, and blah, blah, blah. Huck would actually interact with the narrator.
Right.
And I thought
I do remember that.
Yeah, I thought that was very, very cool.
Yeah. And I think, just to go back to what you said at the beginning there, we should mention, because it's going to be a running theme here for the rest of the Hanna-Barbera Spotlight. And this is something that, to me, now when I'm a kid in the 80s watching different cartoons, obviously, you know, to me, I probably didn't realize that some were older than the others, but kind of like what you said before, most of them just felt like they were going on as I was a kid.
Yeah.
But one thing that did separate some cartoons from others to me, and I did notice the difference, obviously, as most people, it's not like it takes anything to notice the difference, but there was, you know, the cartoons that lasted for 22 minutes or a half hour, basically, and then there was these that had little short segments, like a 7-minute skit. Obviously, most of the older ones, you know, Looney Tunes, Hanna-Barbera, were ones that had these little 7-minute cartoons. It's been done before, or it's been done since, just kind of to harken back to that.
Right.
But I never really realized that the whole concept of having a 30-minute cartoon had not even been thought of at this point. Nobody could consider the fact that nobody would have bought into the fact that a kid was going to stay focused on one story for 30 minutes.
Right.
And it was just easier, probably, as far as writing goes, et cetera, to come up with these little short gags and stuff like that. But that's one thing. I enjoy the fact that they have these little skits because it tells a story, which, God help it, a cartoon couldn't tell a story these days in 7 minutes if they wanted to. It tells a complete story, takes you from beginning, middle to end, has everything going, and it, you know, and then you can move on to the next one, and it doesn't take that much time, so it's almost like, I don't know, there's some type of magic or artistic brilliance of these little 7-minute skits, in my opinion. I mean, as a kid, I didn't like them as much. As a kid, I would have rather watched a 30-minute show, and that's one thing that made me like the 80s cartoons better than these old cartoons, but as an adult, I can appreciate these little 7-minute skits here and there because it's a lot easier to sit through than sitting through a half hour and then finding out you don't like the show or something like that.
Yeah, see, for me, it's like, you know, now, because I'm so used, say you have, like when I had, unfortunately, Boomerang, the Boomerang channel is only on digital cable or satellite now, it's not on actual regular basic classic, but when I would watch this, you know, they would block off, say, from 12 p.m. to 12:30 p.m. or 12 p.m. to 1 p.m., an entire hour of, say, the Huckleberry Hound show or Yogi or, hell, even Tom and Jerry, and they would just show the 7-minute, 6 or 7-minute shorts throughout that hour, and they would cut it off, like, say they're going to do, I don't know, 7 or 8 7-minute shorts in an hour's time span. And they would just, whatever one that, you know, and that would be the end of the hour. So for me, I liked watching them in those blocks. You know, granted, as a kid, I don't remember watching them as far as, like, I don't remember paying attention to time, because honestly, until I started watching Superman the Animated Series and realizing, holy crap, these episodes, even though they're 22 minutes long, on DVD, they're like, wow, that episode went so fast. And yeah. I realize, and, you know, now I know that most, like, say, hour-long shows or whatever are, say, 40-something minutes or,
right,
you know, and half-hour shows are, like, 22, 23 minutes. And I think that sucks because if you didn't have that, granted, if you didn't have the other 8 minutes or 9 minutes or 7 minutes of ads, you wouldn't get show on the air, but it's still 8 or 9 minutes that you could have had to put into the episode.
I imagine, though, with a show like this, now, see, like, the ones that have done it recently, and I can't think of specific examples off the top of my head, but I want to say, like, some that were out around the same time as Tiny Toon and stuff had these short little clips, but what you usually had in later ones was you would have 3 clips of the same show. Whereas back in this time period, I imagine there was some type of... I imagine everybody had their favorite little shorts at the time, and I wonder if having these 3 different segments, you were always kind of wondering or looking forward to seeing if the next one was going to be your favorite.
For example,
in this one, you have Huckleberry Hound, Pixie and Dixie, and Yogi Bear. Let's say Pixie and Dixie was your favorite. You know, I wonder if you sit through a 7-minute Huckleberry Hound cartoon and hoping, you know, like, oh, I hope Pixie and Dixie is going to be next, or, you know, whatever. You had that type of anticipation. And you touched a little bit on Pixie and Dixie, obviously, kind of like a Tom and Jerry. And we don't need to talk a whole lot about Yogi Bear, but think of these three sharing the spotlight in a half hour. That's pretty powerful, a lineup there. I don't recall at all what Hokey Wolf was like. I don't know if I've ever seen it, or if I've just not, you know, kind of, it doesn't stick in my memory.
Well, I was telling you off air that Boomerang will show like mini, like they have this thing where it's an actual projector, but it's an animated projector, and like little still shots of Pixie and Dixie are sitting at the like below the lens, and they show like these mini cartoons between, because Boomerang doesn't do commercials unless it's for Cartoon Network, because obviously Cartoon Network owns that channel.
Yeah.
So they would show like mini cartoons, and I would see like mini cartoons of Hokey Wolf and Ding. I think it's Ding Boy, or it might just be his sidekick might just be called Ding. And he's okay. He's all right. I don't know, though. I don't know.
But I suppose everybody had their favorite out of the three, whether it was Huckleberry Hound, Pixie and Dixie, or Yogi Bear. I mean, we all know which one became the most popular. But the Huckleberry Hound was the one that they pitched. That's the one that, you know, the studios were sold on. And you know, we have to give Huckleberry Hound a lot of credit for basically starting
it all.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it wasn't the first Hanna-Barbera, but it was the first one made specifically for TV, and thank God it was a success.
Yeah, because if it wasn't, we wouldn't have all the cartoons we have nowadays.
I mean, it would have happened at some point, but who knows what course it would have taken.
Yeah.
Is there anything else you want to say as far as the actual show? Oh, I do have something about the actual show that I wanted to say that I almost forgot. Another thing that you get with these old-fashioned Hanna-Barbera shows, which is kind of ironic since we just kind of talked about it also in last week's episode, because of the environmental mask that it was under. But in these old shows, guess what, folks? There's nobody out there making sure you don't see violence. There's nobody out there complaining that there's actual pistols and guns being used on this cartoon. The episode I watched, the last episode I watched, actually had Huckleberry Hound, you know, brandishing his pistol and shooting away, and I was at first that I didn't even think anything about it, and then I thought, wait a second, when's the last time I saw someone with a pistol on a cartoon?
Well, but like in wide shots though, like Looney Tunes is a perfect example. Looney Tunes, in the cartoon where Bugs and Sam are facing off on the train, and they're like, oh, I got a 6-shooter, oh, I got a 7-shooter, oh, I got a 10-shooter, and they start and they start firing bullets. The bullets we see, but we don't actually see them hitting the characters.
Right. It's just like something that just like, God, those were the days back when you could actually have a gun on your cartoon instead of having to have a Nerf neon colored pistol. Sorry. But that was kind of the one thing that struck me when I watched the one episode, you know, besides the classic breaking, you know, the third window and talking to the audience and the southern drawl that we talked about before, and just well-written lines and well-delivered that just made you laugh.
Yeah, me too.
So, you know, you can move into the music. I mean, the music in these old...
It's very simple. I mean, it's just
simple, but it's also something that usually was a backdrop for a higher percentage of the entire cartoon compared to these days. These days, you'll see it in transition, you'll see it at the beginning, you'll see it at the end. There's a lot of times in these Hanna-Barbera cartoons and others of this era where the music is constantly playing in the background.
Right, yeah.
You have more orchestral-type stuff, and obviously you're not going to have a rock soundtrack or whatever like that, but you're going to have this orchestra or, you know, piano or different stuff that kind of keeps your attention. You got to think it's only a 7-minute skit,
right?
So it's very easy to have a tune being played for most of that.
Yes. So going into the legacy segment here, Huckleberry Hound, the Huckleberry Hound Show was probably the series that truly made Hanna-Barbera a household name. It is often credited with legitimizing the concept of animation produced specifically for television, like we said. Within a year of its debut, it was airing in 192 out of 263 markets and had an international audience of over 16 million. It was virtually in the top 10 non-network programs in every major city. Amazingly, 65% of its audience was adults. It usually aired in the 5:30 to 7 p.m. slot, but some major cities like Chicago, it was successful enough that they showed it at in prime time. It did win for an Emmy in 1960, first animated show to ever win an Emmy. In 1961, it was nominated. It was outstanding achievement in the field of children's programming. Do you want to talk about the next little item there? I know how much you hate that.
I want to make one comment first, that I was surprised to learn that 65% of his audience was adults.
Right. Yeah.
That also shows though that they took time in the writing and they made it appeal for not just kids but adults also. Our lovely friend at, it's going to turn out to be one of my least favorite websites in the world, I think. our lovely dumbass friends at IGN with their, I mean, I would stop mentioning this at all, but I figured since we've been mentioning it at so many different episodes that we got to keep going with it. You know, they have their top 100 animated TV shows. Huckleberry Hound, the show that starts it all, gets ranked 63rd. Yep, that's behind every show that come out in the 90s or past, because that list is so biased towards adult and current animated shows. But Huckleberry Hound at least made the list at 63rd, which most of the Hanna-Barbera ones will not. And, of course, a signal of its success and its popularity, it's been referenced in a whole lot of stuff. I found it interesting, a couple of these first ones, which were movies at the time. I mean, we obviously expect things to be referenced in all of the current pop culture stuff, because that's just, like, that's the fad. I mean, that's how Robot Chicken and Futurama and Family Guy and Simpsons and all that stuff, that's how they've made their money, is by spoofing all this old stuff. But look at some of these old things that they've got. Breakfast at Tiffany's, 1961.
Yeah.
That Audrey Hepburn's character briefly wears a Huckleberry Hound mask at the costume shop. And Bye Bye Birdie, back in 1963, Huckleberry Hound pajamas. I mean, that's pretty impressive that it was so popular and so monumental at the time that it was even getting referenced in older stuff like that, which you never saw. You never see that with some of the other stuff, obviously, because a lot of it hadn't been out yet. But, you know, Sanford and Son, Simpsons, Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, there's a reference in that movie. It's been referenced in categories in Jeopardy, Scooby-Doo, Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? There's been questions about it, obviously. So it's been all over the place. It's also on the TV show, The 100 Greatest Cartoons, that aired in 2005. Clips of Huckleberry Hound are shown in that.
Yes. I need to bring up The Simpsons, though. The Behind the Laughter episode, at the end it says, next week on Behind the Laughter, The Huckleberry Hound Show. And we see a clip of Huckleberry Hound being interviewed about it.
Yeah, it is pretty
cool. Oh, damn. As far as the DVD release. What?
No, go ahead.
Well, as far as the DVD release, on November 15th, 2005, The Huckleberry Hound Show Volume 1, The Complete First Series, was released. The additional features include a bonus collectible animation cell, featurette on reconstructing the premiere episode, never-before-seen bumpers and bridge, and a segment tributing Dawes Butler voice actor. I might have to try to find that.
Also, if there's fans out there, I feel the need to mention it, because it's going to apply to most of our shows, even though...
Behind the voice actors.com.
Not at all. Nope, not talking about that at all. It doesn't as much apply to this show as it does some of the ones we'll be doing in future weeks, but there is a set of DVDs out there that most of you probably are aware of, that is Saturday Morning Cartoons. And the reason I bring it up is because actually they just announced a new release, but there is a 1960s Volume 1, there's a 1960s Volume 2, and there's two volumes for 1970s. And each one of these has a, you know, a smorgasbord of different stuff that was released. Usually the not mainstream ones, so, you know, there's not a lot of Huckleberry Hound and Yogi on these, but there is a lot of the other stuff that probably could see Pixie and Dixie or some of those other ones on there. So if you like this era cartoons, that's a good sampling of a whole bunch of stuff. I almost picked one up the other day because it has quite a few of the Hanna-Barbera shows that we'll talk about. And also, they just announced that now they're continuing with the series, and now they have a 1980s Saturday Morning Volume 1 being set for release.
Cool.
has a good variety of cartoons that were kind of flew behind the, you know, under the radar that have not been released on DVD. I guess my best advice is if you're interested in any of those, you know, check out TVshowsondvd.com and see what when the release dates are or what cartoons are on each package. But you can you can find most of these on those DVD sets.
Yes.
Target has the 60s and the 70s ones on their regular rack. Which
I think I have. I would have to go look. I think I have 60s volume 1 and 2. I think I need... Or no, I might have 60 because it's weird the way they released them, though. They released 60s and 70s volume 1 and then 60s and 70s volume 2. So I think I have the 60s and 70s volume 1. I know I have two of them.
Yeah, and the only complaint I've heard about those DVDs is that there's no way to find specific clips. Like, there's no menu or way to jump to a specific area, or it's hard to find.
Right, there is no actual scene selection, but there's a cartoon selection, like an episode selection.
Okay. So some of them do have some cool special features. I know one of them, I don't know which one, has a, you know, they each seem to have at least one bonus feature. And one of them I know has like a whole inside scoop behind the story type thing of Magilla Gorilla, and you know there's another one that has something else. So I don't know. I've never seen them, but I'm almost willing to go buy one just to see what they're like.
Right. Yeah. I actually just ran into my bedroom to grab them. I have 1960s Volume 1. It has The Good, Bad, and the El Cabong, feature on Quick Draw McGraw, The Herculoids, Monster Rock, The Adventures of Frankenstein Jr., and The Impossibles. I mean, there's just a whole bunch of kind of great cartoons on these things, and it's very, very cool. Let's see, with this cool 33-tune, 5-plus-hour set, The Hepcat Craziness of Top Cat, The Unbridled Fun of Quick Draw, The Nuttiness of Agent 00 or 000, Secret Squirrel. You'll find these Peter Potamus, Breezley and Sneasley, Yippee Yahoo, Flintstones, Marine Boy, Herculoids, Magilla Gorilla, Punkin' Puss. I love Punkin' Puss, that's so funny. Ricochet the Rabbit and more reasons to tune in. Now here are the two biggest reasons of all. They are still great fun and you're still a kid at heart. So that's the 1960s volume 1, and then the 1970s, just on the front here, it features Scooby, Batman, the Jetsons, Yogi and Boo Boo, Hong Kong Fooey, oh god, freaking Josie and the Pussycats, yeah. let's see, 17 cartoons, 5-plus hours, a regular featuring the shows you watched while wearing PJs and digging into a bowl of cereal. Here you'll find The Way Out in Front of Josie and the Pussycats, and The Funky Phantom Kids, The Double Down Heroics of Batman and Tarzan, plus you'll enjoy The Jetsons, Yogi's Gang, Goober and the Ghost Chasers, Speed Buggy, Wheelie, and The Chopper Bunch, Amazing Chan Clan. And comic blast from the past. Put yourself in a jumbo bowl of some awesome animated pleasure. According to this, bring back the good time bonuses are Solving Crimes with the Chan Clan Way and Heavens to Betsy Ross, The Spirit of Funky Phantom. So the special features really aren't that much to write home about, but
no.
Hopefully once, and honestly, when I first got these and I first watched them, I was kind of disappointed because I was expecting more of Huckleberry, Yogi, Pixie and Dixie. I was expecting more, honestly, out of these. I really don't care about the Chan Clan.
I think what they probably ran into is that there was only certain ones that weren't, you know, that they could get the licensing to or they could have permission to run, so they kind of had to choose from whatever they could get.
Right.
You know, but luckily with Huckleberry Hound, it does have its own DVD release, which very few of the olden day cartoons do have, besides, you know, obviously you have the Looney Tunes has a ton of DVD releases, but with the Hanna-Barbera, I think Yogi and Huckleberry Hound are two of the only ones that have a specific DVD release related just to their show.
Yes. No later than 1961, the characters began appearing in person at events across America. Hanna-Barbera commissioned costume characters of Huckleberry Hound, Yogi Bear, and Quick Draw McGraw, which appeared at events like the Florida State Fair,
Hanna-Barbera owner Taft Broadcasting started opening theme parks in 1972, beginning with Kings Island. Oh, wow, I live a half an hour away from that place. These parks included areas themed to the company's cartoons and included walk-around characters of Huckleberry Hound, Yogi Bear, and others. The characters were also featured on rides, including carousels. Licensed Huckleberry Hound products include Aladdin brand thermos. Okay, that's kind of weird. The current owner, before current distributor Warner Brothers Television, picked up the ownership of the show following its 1996 acquisition of Turner. So that's the legacy segment. Final thoughts, I think that Huckleberry, it's a very fun cartoon. Again, we also need to mention that there was a whole bunch of, like, made-for-TV, like, you know how Looney Tunes had, like, old animation with new animation mixed in for, like, say, Daffy Duck's Quack Busters and all the, like, 1001 Rabbit Tales and stuff like that? There were movies that Boomerang showed at their Boomerang Theater, like, Huck is this mysterious blue-eyed stranger, blue-faced stranger, stuff like that. So there are, like, other things other than just the 7-minute cartoons. So that's pretty cool. Overall, great cartoon, I think. What about you?
I want to say, I told you a while back that I'd be bringing some other cartoons back up again in this episode or in one of these Hanna-Barbera episodes. I think what separates this for me from other cartoons is, if I'm going to watch a cartoon for, great visuals and animation and stuff like that, I'll turn to the more current ones, from the 80s on. If I want to turn one, that is void of all the fluff and just actually a good cartoon show, these are probably the places to go. And I think that's what separates this from some of the... I have a real sore spot, and it really pisses me... A lot of cartoons these days really piss me off because they try to go retro and dumb down the animation, but then they don't have good stories.
Yeah.
And that's a problem, and I wish I could think of more, but I try to put them out of my imagination or out of my memory banks as immediately as possible. But there was so much crap put out in the 90s and in the 2000s that was in this style of animation like Huckleberry Hound, but just was nothing like... They said, okay, we'll rip off and try to go nostalgic and retro by using their style, but then we won't put the time into actually making it a good cartoon. And I don't know. That's the problem I have with things like Dexter's Laboratory and other shows like that. So I think they did it right, and Huckleberry Hound, it's not the greatest cartoon in the world, absolutely not, but that it was... is what it is for its time period, and it was great for that time period.
Dexter was 29 episodes ago. Let it go, dude.
Well, I couldn't think of the other ones that are like that, but there's other ones like that. I don't remember if that's what... Is that what Foster's Imaginary Friends is like? Is that kind of that same animation style? I don't know. There's other crap that's come out since then that's basically the same show.
All right. So thank you for joining us here on Tooncast. There are several ways to get in contact with us or leave feedback for the show. First is you visit www.geekcastradio.com and find all the other podcasts there. Second is you can stop by ProducanEmpire.com/Nexus. Those are our forums. Third is you can leave the show feedback in iTunes. We now have a voicemail line. Call us and leave us your thoughts on each episode. Be sure to say what show you're leaving the message for and your name. The number is 502-526-5821. You can also follow us on Twitter. The show name there is GCRN Tooncast. Mine is TFGRN Mike. And what is your Twitter?
FossKDawg.
Yes. We hope you enjoyed this episode of Tooncast and wish you'll join us next time when we will be continuing the Hanna-Barbera Spotlight with Yogi Bear. For now, I am TFG1 Mike with...
Tom Selleck.
What?
Tom Selleck.
You wish you were Tom Selleck. Until next time, ladies and gentlemen, see ya.
Pixie, Dixie, Dilly-Dum are the best of friends. Pixie, Dixie, Dilly-Dum are friends until the end. Pixie, Dixie, Dilly-Dum sometimes enjoy a spat. With Mr. Jinx the Cat.
Oh, it's so funny.
Look at that left hook.
Smack that cat.
Give him a fat lip.
Oh, look at that scaredy cat run. He must be the world's strongest mice.
A knockout mouse cartoon. Gee, I wish we had a friend like Knockout Mouse.
Yeah, but he ain't for real, Dixie.
But I'm for real, Shorty.
Yo!
Knockout Mice, eh? I'll fix you guys. Just remember, wise guys, that mice's beating up the cat stuff happens only in cartoons. So don't get any fancy ideas.
He's so right, Dixie. Imagine a mouse smacking a cat.
Well, we can dream, can't we? Look, Pixie. It's a telegram.
Well, open it, Dixie. Telegrams scare the pants off of me. Well, who's it from, Dixie?
Have we got a cousin in Texas?
Cousin in Texas?
That's what the telegram says. Listen to this. Pixie and Dixie, I'm coming to visit you all for a spell. Your cousin from Texas, Cousin Tex. Cousin Tex?
Are you all a Josh and me, partner?
Shucks, no, partner. I never met a mice from Texas. When he comes in, he'll probably say, howdy, cousins.
Howdy, cousins!
Howdy!
Where's Cousin Dixie at?
He's behind the door, Tex.
Well, dog my cats, it's little old Cousin Dixie. You look kind of puny, son. You need fattening up. Speaking of grub, how's about putting on the old feed bag? I'm plumb hungry.
The grub's in the kitchen.
Well, I'll just mosey over to the chuck wagon for some chow.
Look out for the cat, Tex.
Cat? Shuckins. I ain't scared of no cotton-picking cat.
But Jinx is dynamite.
Don't fret none, partner.
I must be having a nightmare. I thought I saw a king-size mice.
Oh, Jinx is after Tex.
Poor Cousin Tex.
Pardon my glove, Buster. Are you for sure, you know, a meese-type mice?
Sure enough, stranger. I'm a Texas mouse.
In my book, partner, a mice is a mice. And since I'm a cat type, mice is like you all, has gotta go.
Jinxie's got Tex.
You had not a rile me, stranger. Don't get my dander up, partner.
You trying to frighten me.
So long, Cousin Tex.
Get your cotton picking hands off of me, you mangy varmint.
Give you a rough time, Tex.